Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, March 6th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Kelly. What's up?
You know, little of this, little of that. We'll talk about it in a minute. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi. Nice to be here. Good morning.
Glad to have you with us. Now, Andrew, I wanted to talk to you about our first topic today, which is a piece you wrote about a long hashtag long reads article about Apple and their environmental stance.
Yeah, it was this article from Earther, which is part of Gizmodo. Mm-hmm. So it's a deep dive into Apple, their manufacturing process, and like maybe what they really mean. Like, for example, she writes that some critics have said that when Apple started recycling some of their aluminum, Apple, of course, made it seem like it was environmental. Mm-hmm. But some people say, well, it was also like maybe they just did it for the money, because the type of manufacturing process that Apple uses with milling machines, mm-hmm. I guess that process is very wasteful. So they would either have to, you know, get all that metal back that they waste, or mm-hmm. they might be losing money on that.
Yeah. Well, one thing they do, for people who don't know, the reason that most people refer to the MacBook Pro as the unibody style is because they basically take a block of aluminum and shave off the pieces that they don't want, and that becomes the body of the machine. So that's why there's no seams or anything. And so the point is well taken that, yeah, you know, it doesn't do Apple any good to have all these shavings, because we've seen in some of the How It's Made videos that I'm so fond of, how they do some of that. And they like grind out, you know, a section of the aluminum and so that they can put the circuit board in there and all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting to watch, but yeah, it would make sense for them to reclaim some of that. But what I will say is that anybody else who's doing that kind of manufacturing isn't talking at all about what they're doing, whether it saves them money or not.
Yeah. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Recycling for the environment or just because it saves you money. Mm-hmm. But what she pointed out was that Apple's manufacturing process itself uses quite a bit of energy. I think Apple said in a number that was quoted was 77% of Apple's carbon footprint comes from its manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And so some people were pointing out that if Apple wanted to be even more environmental, maybe they could use alternative products other than aluminum.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. But at the same time, I live in Oregon, and one of the things that Apple owns, if you went and looked over a list of their assets, is a hydroelectric power plant in Central Oregon. And the reason that they bought it was so that it would supply renewable energy to the data center that they built here in Oregon. And so,
So
I look at things like that, and like, these are things that I just know about Apple. I know that because like it's here and I keep meaning to go over there. There's not a lot else where this is. About the only other thing that is near where Apple's data center is Facebook's data center. And so I don't have a whole lot of reason to go end up in that part of the state, but I keep meaning to go because I think it would be interesting. And, you know, I think of things like Apple doing that and releasing reports on the kind of progress that they are making with their suppliers, which we will talk about a little while later. Sorry to spoil the second half of the show for anybody. But I look at some of those sorts of things, and then I look at this article, and I feel a little bit like maybe people are harshing on Apple a little unnecessarily, only because I know, like, in this article in particular, it takes all the way to the end before they say, like, we contacted all these other tech companies and nobody else bothered to get back to us except HP, who gave us a report from 2017 or something
like
that.
Yeah, so this this is basically just about Apple. It's not a general technology report.
Right.
And Apple has said that, like you mentioned, I think they, I don't know if it's just Apple or their entire supply chain now is 100% renewable energy. Mm-hmm. So,
which would explain how such a high percentage of their carbon footprint comes from manufacturing, because they've done so much to eliminate it in some of these other ways. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what fascinates me about this article, Andrew, was the different elements that go into the iPhone and the different places that they come from. The article starts off with about Apple uses about 75 different elements from the periodic table in the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from disparate places. They come from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where rare earths come, cobalt comes from China and Mongolia. And there are all these different places in the world that are specialty producers of things like tungsten and tantalum and tin and gold and silver and palladium. Mm-hmm. And you almost have to be a geographic expert in politics and because if there's a flare-up or any one of those countries stops producing a key element, your iPhone production is going to be in trouble. That's, I thought that was particularly interesting.
Well, and yeah,
it's kind of a delicate balance.
Yeah,
it is. And
the more you can do from recycling, the less you have to worry about that kind of geopolitical instabilities.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing was a thing, John, that you had pointed out when we were talking about this initially before the show, and that was that we don't know what percentage, aside from aluminum, because we know that at least a couple of models are 100% recycled aluminum now, we don't know about those other elements, what percentage of those are newly mined versus recycled. Of those 75 elements, like, we have no idea the percentages on how much of that stuff is, whether Apple's recycling it themselves or buying it on the open market, we don't know how much of what goes into an iPhone 10 or a 10S or a 10R, 10C, whatever. We don't know how much of any of that is stuff that was newly mined in some of these politically unstable places versus how much is recycled. Because, like you say, you know, it would be a fair, it would behoove them to do as little business with those places as possible to make sure that supply lines aren't screwed up. And if what you're using is existing stuff that was already mined that you're just using again, then
yeah, the mixture between between mined material and recycled material determines how robust your supply line is and how quickly you can make phones.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to get away from importing all these materials and mining them too quickly, you're able to make phones fast enough and you get into a scarcity of production issue. Mm-hmm. So that balance and how long it takes to achieve the zero mining element and weigh that against meeting demand is a tricky issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And part of it is a thing that, because I don't know, I wonder what purpose some of that rare earth stuff serves. I mean, it's called rare for a reason. It's right in the name. And, you know, having to mine that stuff from the Republic of Congo and some of these other places where, you know, if it rains on a day when a dictator had plans to go outside, it's possible Apple doesn't have a relationship with them anymore. And trust me, stranger things have happened in the Republic of Congo. But I feel like there's a little bit there that I kind of want justified in a way, not because I don't think Apple's doing anything responsible at all, because even the way this article continues to make it sound all the way through the article is like Apple's not doing enough, or they only did it, you know, like Andrew was saying earlier, you know, they were only doing it to make money. And
I get that feeling, Kelly. It's a great article. It poses the challenges that Apple faces as a editorial angle, as opposed to bashing Apple for not being able to do anything enough.
Well, there's a lot of information in the article, and there's a lot of facts. stats, and that was nice to see. But I did sort of get the feeling that the slant is Apple could be doing better, Apple could be doing more, or even when Apple is doing more, like 100% recycled aluminum is
weighs on what I just the said mini. A minute ago. If Apple did more too fast, they'd find themselves with shortages and not being able to meet demand, and right. stockholders would get upset.
Right. And that was what led to my question, which is I don't know what purpose some of those rare earth elements are serving from an electronic standpoint in my phone. Like, why do I need
neodymium magnets, right?
Well, that's like the only one I know, and that's because I know that those are speakers. But the other stuff, like, you know, there are 75 elements in your phone. Like, I know that some of them are going to be obvious things like silicon, you know, and I get that. But what I want to know is what do the rest of them do? And it's not because I am trying to hold Apple to any sort of standard. I'm just curious. I didn't realize that there were 75 different elements in my phone. I figured it was some number, but I didn't think it was quite that high. And I don't know what they're for. Number.
That is an astounding number.
And so that's what I want to know. And if it's because if we use this element, it conducts something better, or it makes the processor faster, or we can do it in so much less space. Okay. I'm not mad about it. I just want to know. So I think it would be interesting. And I know Apple's never going to talk about it because Apple doesn't want to tell anybody what's in them because reasons, right? Like they already have trouble with Samsung copying them. They don't need any help.
This sheds a lot of light on Apple's design changes, you know, changing mm-hmm. from liquid crystals to OLED or changing the battery. We always think of those in terms of cost, efficiency, likability, availability, but we never think about the supply chain and the elements that go into designing these products and how it may limit or encourage Apple to go one technical direction in its display technology mm-hmm. or internals. Mm-hmm. We don't think about that very much. That's why this article is so great.
So I looked at some rare earth elements and what they're used for. Mm-hmm. It's just a quick search, but on Wikipedia, it says that rare earths elements can be used in the production of LCD screens, fiber optics, microphones, speakers, hard disk drives. Mm-hmm. So there's, as well as, you know, much more stuff. So that's a couple of examples.
Okay. So, yeah. Because that's what I wondered was, like, is it something to do with the circuit board or something to do with the display? So there we go. So what's interesting in this article is, like John said, like I said, there's loads and loads of information in here about what Apple's doing, how some of it works. I got the feeling that they were sort of trying to make out like Apple isn't measuring up, but it's because what they're actually talking about is Apple measuring up to their own goal, which was that they want to stop mining. Like as much as possible, if, you know, if not completely, and cool, I would be for that, you know. But then it talks about how, like, having that goal, you know, they're a really long ways from that goal and all of that. And I sort of figured that they would be, because it's not going to be something that can happen instantly.
This might also explain the gap between product rollouts. If Apple decides to redesign a product for some technical reason and they find they can't get the right materials for that, mm-hmm. they might have to re-engineer the product with the materials they have at hand, mm-hmm. and the Mac comes out a year later than we thought it was going to come out.
Yeah. Now,
that's a good point.
I would be a lot less mad about the Mini if they said part of the delay was making sure that we could make 100% recycled aluminum cases for them. I would be like into that. I'd be way less angry about how long it took to make the Mini if they were like, mm-hmm. "Yeah, we wanted to make sure that the Mini the body of the Mini was legit and that it was up to our standards." And it took a while.
Probably don't want to do that for competitive reasons to tip off competitors. Yeah.
But it does say on the Mini is a 100% recycled aluminum body. So I think it's the Mini. Yeah. The Mini and last year's MacBook Air are the two that say that they have 100% recycled aluminum cases. And so mm-hmm. it would be cool if they were like, it just took longer than we thought. And that's all you have to say. And then, you know, most people would be like, oh, all right, cool. Now it's a recycled case. That's awesome. I mean, that's the kind of thing that would get more attention, I feel like, for some of those devices.
Design decisions get locked in an early stage. You know, say in 2015, for example, they decided we're going to use recycled aluminum for the next Mac Mini, and you just ship one in October 14, and you say, okay, the next one's going to be recycled. So you commit to that, and then you have build. You go through the process of recycling those industrial design and the manufacturing, and you have a problem. And then at some point, there's a meeting where they say, should we drop our efforts and go back to milling fresh aluminum, or should we continue to try to struggle with fixing the problem with the recycle process that we have? And so there's a big decision to be made. And so you say, well, we're going to stick with the recycling. We like that.
Yeah.
We think that has the best chance of success and the best cost. So you go with that. Another year goes by before you solve the manufacturing issue.
Right.
And meanwhile, all of us are sitting out here going, darn, where's the new Mac Mini?
I don't know if it was darn, but yeah. There was much fist shaking aimed at Cupertino during those years.
Just a thought. I don't know if it happened, but it seems likely.
But it's pretty, it's a very likely thing to cause a delay, like being able to turn shavings into a new product that you could do something useful with. That seems like a pretty useful thing.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we will talk more about this in a minute, I promise, because we have a very related second subject that's coming up. But right now, I want to talk to you about Keeps. So Keeps is the easiest and most affordable way to keep the hair you have. 2 out of 3 men will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. These FDA-approved products used to cost a lot, but now thanks to Keeps, they're inexpensive and they're easy to get. It takes 5 minutes and as little as $10 a month, and you never have to worry about hair loss again. So getting started is super easy. You sign up, you answer some questions, and you take some photos of your hair. And then a licensed physician reviews that information online and recommends the right treatment for you, which gets shipped straight to you every 3 months. Keeps is offering generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. And some of you guys have probably tried them before, but you've never gotten them for this price. Keeps is between $10 and $35 a month, and right now you can get your first month free. So here's what you do. Go to keeps.com/TDO. That's KEEPS.com/TDO, and you will get a month free on your first order. So go check it out. Keeps.com/TDO. Now, our second topic today is, I don't know if it's intentionally related to this article that came out from Earther, but Apple has released the official title of it is the 2019 Supplier Responsibility Progress Report. And part of what this is a sort of twofold report on Apple's progress. And what it has to do is their relationship with suppliers. And so this includes everything from workers and the conditions for those workers to the actual environmental impact and manufacturing practices and how those things have changed. And what was interesting to me about this was seeing some of the stuff that they talk about in this report. And part of it is when you go to the page for the report itself, as you scroll down the page, there are places where there's like a tile with a photo on it or some text on it. And you can click on that and dig down a little further into that. So one part of that, for example, is this one that talks about zero tolerance for debt bonded labor, which is forced labor. Or indentured servitude, they used to call it in the old days. And so they talk about how they've what they've done to try to improve those conditions and educational opportunities that are offered to workers, and not just general education, but on their rights. And this is what these are the rights that you have as a worker in a factory in your workplace. And here's what you can do if those rights are being violated. And they talk about workplace safety. They talk about educational opportunities that they have available to people who work in the factories where they do business.
Not just skills, but about worker rights. Human rights as well as skills.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
yeah, which was interesting to read about. And then they talk a little bit more about the kind of chemicals that get used and partnering with places to get to zero waste for certain things and steps that they're taking to combat climate change. And it's interesting to see the evolution. Apple's been putting these out for a while. And seeing these progress reports, I believe they go back, I know they go back at least 10 years, because I want to say like 2008 or 2009, I think, was the first one. And they have them all available if you want to see how things are evolving. They talk about how things are evolving. And as a report, it's a very interesting piece of information to see what Apple's doing, primarily because you know, we were talking about this other article being Apple focused. And what I'm seeing from here is like, I don't see, and maybe it's because they're just not getting as much attention because it isn't Apple, so nobody clicks. But I'm not seeing this kind of thing from Microsoft or Amazon. Amazon's in the hardware business now. I don't know what their practices look like for the kind of stuff that they're manufacturing. I'm not seeing it from Microsoft for Xboxes. I'm not seeing it from Sony for PlayStations, LG for all the bajillion things, Samsung for all the things that they make. Like, I don't see this kind of report from any other company.
Apple got out ahead early and they've refined their process and worked at it really hard. And so they have a right to tout it. But I think the deafening silence from the other companies suggests they're just not there yet. Don't want to talk about how far behind they are.
Right. And part of the problem with that is that then you have no way to measure progress. Because I can't look back at your report from 2008 and see where you were in 2008 and see where you are in 2019 and go, oh, you've done really well. You could do better, but you've done really well in these 10 years to get from where you were to where you are. Like, I have no measurement of that now.
Well, I think it has to do with how robust and how healthy the business is. Apple has lots of money and they can afford to do what they're doing. And other companies may feel like maybe not making as much money as they'd like. And they can't afford to invest in these technologies right now. I think it's interesting that we think of the other day when it's the shareholders report, Tim Cook profoundly reminded the audience, we are capitalists. And when you think of capitalists, you tend to sometimes think of, perhaps depending on your psychological bent, companies that plunder the planet. How refreshing is it that a company that is strongly and completely capitalist is spending so much time working on preserving the planet, being good steward? That's amazing. It's hard to live up to.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say, for the record, because it was at the end of the article at Earther, HP, they said they reached out to HP, Dell, Lenovo, Samsung, and Huawei for comment. And as of the publication of this article, only HP responded, and it was with a link to a 2017 Sustainable Impact Report. When you look at the executive summary page of the Sustainable Impact Report, it says 87% of employees agree that HP is socially and environmentally responsible. That's one of the metrics that they tout in the executive summary. Yeah. So scrolling through this, like, I see that they are trying to reduce carbon footprint, water footprint. There are some shiny graphs in here of different sorts of things. But I'm not, all I'm seeing is numbers. I'm not seeing a lot of information behind a lot of these. Like, this is how we did it, or this is some sort of thing that we're doing this by, and it doesn't have to be specifics. It can be, we're doing this by offering better education to suppliers, or we're doing this by offering this sort of thing, or making this sort of stance, or we've developed this new policy. And so what I thought was interesting, John, when you talked about the shareholders meeting, was we're capitalists. And they talked about, like, and that was the thing specifically that Tim Cook pointed out. And it's kind of funny that in this Arthur article, you know, they talk about, yeah, but they're only doing it because it makes them more money. But at the same time, like, how much does that matter if what it's doing is better for the environment? And that's probably a good idea. Like, if the, like, yeah, it feels like the bonus is the profitability. Don't you think, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, like you were mentioning, they don't really go into a lot of detail about how they're doing this. I mean, the last three headlines in this are leading by example and sharing our work. Another one says sharing health, environmental health and safety knowledge. So, but those sections don't really have a whole lot of information. So mm-hmm. I'd like to see more of how they're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I will say is that, like, the little bit of transparency that we get from Apple is way more than we get from anybody else. And I wish that were not true. I wish other companies were being more transparent. I wish they were being more upfront about the kind of stuff that they're doing. And on all of these fronts, on the workplace rights and, you know, the supplier code of conduct that Apple has with all of the factories where this stuff comes from, as well as the stuff that they are doing, that Apple is doing themselves in order to be a little bit more environmentally conscious. So I think, you know, like I said, I think about things like they bought a hydroelectric plant to make sure that they were supplying renewable energy to a data center here. And I think that kind of stuff is, that to me is a very interesting way to solve that problem because it would never occur to, like, obviously I'm not a tech company executive, but it would never occur to me to go, you know, we should just buy the power plant and get into the business of hydroelectric dams in order to make sure that we're doing right by the environment when we install this data center in the wilderness of Oregon, because it's really wilderness. That's why I'm never there. There's really nothing else there. So it, to me, that's part of what I think Apple is doing that is interesting, just like with their products. They do something creative or something interesting and go about solving a user issue in a new way by doing this. And I think that's cool. And I would like to see how other, I would like to see the solutions other companies come up with, because they have a different set of people working there. They're going to come up with a different set of ideas. And this is one of those things where I want other companies to be in this same space and doing the same sorts of things, because I want to know how other companies are doing it, how other companies are solving these problems, and what kind of progress they're making on this kind of stuff. Like, I want Amazon to tell me what they're doing to make sure that their products are not completely laying waste to the environment. I want to hear that from Microsoft. I want to hear that from Dell. Like, I want that information from those other companies. I get the feeling, Andrew, you probably do too.
Yeah. The only other company that I had heard something similar was Google. A while ago, they said that they were at or close to 100% renewable energy for their data centers. I don't think they release supply chain reports like Apple does. I mean, they're more software anyway, but
right.
Yeah, other hardware companies should do this too.
Yeah, because like I said, I want to be able to measure that progress because I want to be able to cheer for another company that's doing something good. And maybe you're not in the greatest position now, but once you release this report, and you work toward getting better, then next year's report might look better. And then you can point back and go, look how far we've come. And people will cheer for that. Like, people want to give you credit, generally, for being an environmentally responsible company. And that's an important thing to consider when you're making purchasing decisions, too. Right, John?
Yeah, in the past, we've heard comments from Steve Jobs and Tim Cook about how in a downturn, Apple invests in the future. Mm-hmm. Now we know what some of that investment was.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I did one other thing in the article that was interesting is it talks a little bit about Daisy, which was the robot that dismantles iPhones, which we haven't really heard much about in recent times. Like, we heard about the robot and then it kind of went away. And it was interesting to see that it's still in existence. There are two now, because there's another one, like, in the Netherlands, I think it said.
Apple's licensing that technology.
Awesome!
Yeah.
That's what I want to hear about. Like, how is Apple, like, by being a pioneer in this space, what's Apple doing? Like, this makes me, this, that, John, that statement right there, that gives me more faith in Apple being a services company. It really does. Because who knew they were, like, accidentally going to get into the recycling business or the renewable power business or whatever, and those are services.
Or making money licensing robotic technology.
To dismantle your technology. Like, that's awesome. There's only one letter in common between Apple and Skynet. That's all I'm saying. We used to say it was Microsoft, but now I'm not so sure. Okay. We will definitely talk more about this. I'm hopeful that we will have more information from other companies as this kind of stuff gets more attention and as Apple gets looked well upon by some places for at least having done something or at least coming out and talking about what they're doing. Even if it's not 100% where they want to be, at least they're taking those steps, and you can go back and look through them. We'll have links to that in the show notes. And I will talk to all of you about all of that in the future. And I will probably have at least one of these guys on to talk about it with me. One of them being Andrew Orr. Thanks for coming by, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And John Martellaro, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.